What's up, everyone? It's Roger and James here from the Disney Community Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about all of the kind of the big news from Disney from the past week. So we're going to be talking Toy Story Shufflers, the new collectible that they announced. We're going to be talking about the new expansion at Epcot. We're going to be talking about some insane prices on some Funko products. Also, a great new Disney Lego ideas and a few other bits and pieces along the way. So James, had a good week?
I can't complain too much. Not much Disney related, but I did see several movies this week, none of which were related to the Oscars, and I'm not interested in even looking at the Oscars, which aired, I don't know, a couple hours ago from the time of recording.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I have been cranking on with Kingdom Hearts 3 every night. Last night, finally beat it. Beat it, got to see the ending, I will be honest. I'm going to do a written review, but we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth probably in a future episode, because wait till you've got a little bit further on in it. But man, those boss battles at the end, just what they make you go through to get to the end is just like, you're just like, I got to that thinking like, I just want it to end, please. Just get these, you kind of, how many false finishes with the bosses can you have before eventually you're like, It's just, I think I remember it, but Dream Drop Distance, where it was just like multiple bosses, one after another, and they just keep getting harder and harder to the point where you're like, this is just not fun. It's just me whacking the button over and over again. I mean, just basically hitting the button until I can basically do cure.
I mean, I haven't gotten to that yet, but it's definitely a cheap way of adding a little bit of extra time to a gameplay. So I don't know. Yeah. I'll find out what I feel like when I get
there.
I'll
also be honest, it was a bit of an odd one with this game. It was almost like, right, we're going to have the Disney bit, where we're going to get all these worlds, and we're going to have this one game. And then in the last 3 hours, we're going to have an entirely Kingdom Hearts kind of confusion fest with all the storyline bundled into a couple hours. Yeah, it kind of, that last, like, the last world or two that weren't related to Disney feels like an entirely different game to the one you play when you're running around singing Let It Go and visiting. Quite weird with that, but nevertheless, we'll go into that a little bit more detail once you've got a little bit further on. But I am so sort of chuffed to the fact of that I've actually finished Kingdom Hearts 3, and yeah, it took me about 20, I think my official time was 25 and a half hours it took me to get through it. And now I'll be honest, I didn't do a lot of the emblems, a lot of the chests. I love the fact that I got to the end and my recipes were zero, or whatever I did, whatever I was just supposed to be doing with Ratatouille, I didn't even bother with, because trying to make eggs with him was just like, yeah, I don't need this in my life. Have you got to that bit yet?
I've definitely unlocked the ability to use them, but I've never had to use them because they're combat buffs. And they're supposed to help with like boss battles and stuff, but I haven't needed them thus far. If they had like an experience points bonus or something that gave you actual skills or something like that, increase the number of team up skills that you get, like how quickly it activates, that might be useful. But most of the time, like, you get a boost to strength and magic points. I'm like, great, I got plenty of those. Now I could see how this would be really useful if they implement the rumored critical mode or the super hard mode. You definitely will want to take advantage of every single buff you can get. But even playing on normal mode, I haven't found any use for them really.
I was on baby mode. I was just there for the experience, and even that was sometimes just like going, okay, yeah, it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was necessarily challenging to the point of dying and having to keep repeating, but in all honesty, that's the one thing in Kingdom Hearts I don't want to be doing the minute, because I was getting extremely frustrated with those bosses, and if I had to redo them, it wouldn't have taken many attempts for me to walk, because I remember I did that with Dream Drop Distance, but those boss battles just got to the point where I'm just like, I'm getting so frustrated. It's like, I am not enjoying this anymore. But luckily I didn't get to that point. But I'm just really glad to have kind of finished it. Overall, it's that kind of thing of like, now I'm done. It's that weird thing of, I know a lot of people have been waiting for it for so long. But for me, from Kingdom Hearts 2 to Kingdom Hearts 3 was only about 6 months. So it wasn't, I'm kind of, having completed Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and 3 within essentially a 12 to 18 month time period, if I could go, if I didn't have another game for a few years, I probably would be done. That would be quite, I'd be probably all right with that.
I mean, I wouldn't expect another Kingdom Hearts game for quite some time. And even when we do get one, it'll be a spin-off title more in line with Dream Drop Distance or something like that. So
yeah, I think the thing it might be,
I don't know, but yeah, but we weren't going to talk about Kingdom Hearts. We're going to save that for when I finish the game.
Yes. Right. Be okay. Point. So quick other, since we're on games, I'll just do that bit now. And it's really quick. Two games got announced for Xbox Game Pass, which were Epic Mickey 2 and Alien Isolation. They're coming later this month. This Xbox Game Pass, it's getting better, and I'm very tempted to jump into it. There's a few games on there that I'll actually quite, I want to play that Alien Isolation. That's kind of quite cool. So that's kind of quite interesting to see that they've done that. There's also rumors of it maybe coming to the Switch, this Xbox Game Pass, but that could be years away. So let's jump now into keeping on the games front. Marvel Games announced that they've, unsurprisingly, are adding a load of Captain Marvel content into the mobile games. So pretty much the full suite will be getting them. So I'm just going to bring up here.
I mean, this is my surprised face right now.
Yes. Yeah. So we've got Marvel Puzzle Quest, Contest of Champions, Battle Line, Strike Force, and Future Fight are all getting content, all running through from February right through till March. There's a new Kree campaign in Marvel Strike Force, and you've got new characters, Captain Marvel and Mineva, or I don't know who that one is. Marvel Future Fight is getting new characters, Koloth, Mineva, and Nick Fury, and new costumes for Captain Marvel and Ronan, and some new boss battles with Talos, Krees, and the Skrulls. Battle Lines is getting new cards for Captain Marvel, Nick Fury, Ronan, and Gusta Katz. And Marvel Puzzle Quest is getting new original content as well. And Contest of Champions are going to be getting Captain Marvel and Nick Fury in late March. Wasn't a huge kind of shock to see that, really, in all honesty. In some of these games, it's a bit difficult because Captain Marvel was already there. So it's just a case of sprucing it up a little bit. Again, just kind of shows you the problem when there's no like proper video games out and it's just tying in with these mobile titles. Nothing there really personally kind of caught my attention because it's that difficult thing of Captain Marvel's been in most of these games, so it's just a little bit of content really.
Yeah, and obviously I haven't played a mobile game in quite some time now, so yeah, not that big a thing, but it is good that they're doing this tie-in. It's another way of marketing the movie, getting awareness of it out there, getting some of the characters in there, getting new costumes for the characters. So not unexpected, but also not a bad thing. And new content for games, for even these mobile games, is always important. Keeps people coming back in and playing them. Much else to say about it, really.
There was an interesting article, really, that apparently Netmarble are struggling, but their income has severely been dropped in their latest results. Contest of Champions isn't maybe pulling in what it used to. And there's been a lot of talk really in the game thing at the minute of how mobile games are no longer, they were seen as like the golden goose, the thing that every company was chasing after because they had all this money to be made. And now they're all starting to realize that the money isn't there. There's no much, yeah, there's money to be made for certain things, but there's such a crowded market. Players don't spend what they expect on it, and it's just the fact that even like Netmarble and stuff are really starting to figure out that the edge of these big mobile games is starting to drop off a bit, and maybe that's why, you know, we are seeing a few more console titles coming in, because they realize that actually all the money isn't in mobile games anymore.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you said, they've oversaturated the market, and consumers are getting more wise to the ways of mobile games and microtransactions, and people are going, why am I spending $100 on a mobile game when I can spend $60 on a full-fledged game that doesn't, well, hopefully doesn't have additional costs. Obviously, that's becoming less and less the case. But it's just a lot of factors, and the Golden Goose it's not dead. There's still a lot of money to be made here, but it's not as much money, and it's spread out among more people.
The big factor that's going to kick in is with Microsoft and Google both announcing their big cloud projects that's coming up, the streaming gaming service, and they want to get onto consoles and kind of using controllers for that. That's going to be the next big thing of when you start getting console experiences on your phone through streaming, through Xbox, You know, let's be honest, if they're bringing it to the Switch as streaming, and they saw it earlier last year with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, they put like a Google one out there and you could stream it. This is where that's going to be the next wave of like basically mobile playing will be streaming it from a cloud that's running the Xbox rather than through your phone. And I can't help but looking at these mobile titles and thinking these are going to look very, very weak when you start putting up against console experiences. Because, you know, a lot of these games you have to play online anyway. So you start streaming Xbox One games through a cloud on, and, you know, things like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, suddenly these mobile games are going to look very, very tame.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you can already play games like Fortnite and PUBG on your phone, which are extremely popular. So why would you play little mission simulator like Avengers Academy? I know it's gone now, but why would you play that when you can play Fortnite, which is all the rage? And I'm sure Apex Legends will be on there at some point. And everyone, this will be the thing is phone versions of popular online service games. It would not surprise me in the slightest if there was not some very dumbed down version of Destiny or The Division or Anthem, maybe not the latter based on sales, but you never know, at some point in the future. Obviously, it's not going to look like the PC version or the console version, but it might give you enough of that experience where you could be waiting for the bus and you can get in there real fast and do some quick grinding, go find some loot, and when you get back home, it's ready for you to go.
Yeah, I mean, this is why they're all sort of firing up their live services, because they know that the market's going to shift a lot. And probably in about the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a big shift to streaming games like Netflix, things like Games Pass, you know, and you're getting things like Alien Isolation. You know, the fact if you could be sat there playing, you know, those kind of games either on your Switch or on your mobile phone, that's especially when, you know, it's all the technologies all starting to come into line. And, you know, Disney are going to have to adjust, you know, this like games for what they're doing. You know, you are probably going to start seeing a lot more free-to-play console experiences but they are going to have to up their ante. You know, Marvel, you know, something like Marvel Heroes actually probably would be, you know, something that could be completely retooled and a new version of it would probably work as a free-to-play console game based on, you know, that kind of experience. They are probably planning things like that in the future, because, you know, this mobile experience is only going to, we're in a current way of doing it and things are all about the shift.
Well, I mean, Diablo fans are probably sitting in the corner going, hey, we're the unwilling test bunnies of this one. So we'll see how Diablo Immortal goes.
I'm one of these.
Talk about, yeah.
Tone deaf.
Tone deaf. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. That's a polite way of putting it. I might put it a little less polite than that. But, and I'm not even a huge Diablo fan. I enjoy it, but it's not like, I can't wait for Diablo 4 or whatever. And so I'm not sitting here like, oh, I don't really want Diablo Immortal. But the way they handled that was just awful. Anyway. Another tangent.
Yes, on another tangent. Right, so let's carry on with the tangent. So this last week, Disney released a new pop vinyl, which was released in the parks, and then it was released online. It was this Inside Out Rainbow Unicorn Pop Vinyl, and this is exclusive to Disney. You could only get it in the parks or online at Shop Disney. Now, nothing really about this pop vinyl is special. There's nothing about it connected to the theme parks. I don't quite get, other than it's being a Disney character. It looks nice. I'd quite happily add it to my collection. $24.95 was the price tag on this. And it's like, that is nearly free. The most pop vinyls are what, $10 to $24.99 for it's just like, what are they? I don't know. And there was a lot of talk about this online. This was just way too expensive. Like, this has got nothing to do with it. It's like, it's not even really that much. This thing is going to be sat at the parks all year, and it's going to be reduced on Shop Disney, because this is not going to sell at $25.
Well, for what it's worth, it's already down to $19.95 on Shop Disney. I checked a couple of minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
So they knocked $5 off, which still makes it $8 to $10 more than it should be to begin with. But okay, it's not $25 anymore. It's $20. I don't know if that's true in the parks. It might still be $24.95 if you go to World of Disney or something like that. I don't care enough to bother checking. I'll be there in a month, and I might see it on the shelf and remember this story, but that's about the extent of it.
Well, do you know what? It's quite weird, actually, the fact that they've already done a price cut. That doesn't happen very often, that where you see a price cut that quickly from Shop Disney. They must have either realized they put it in wrong, or they realized there was maybe a lack as to going, well, why isn't this thing selling? And then they've looked online and everyone going, blah, blah, blah. Even at $19.99, that seems a little bit pricey for this, because there is not really any justification for it to be, you know, it's just like the other Inside Out characters. I know we get that at other retailers, you know, I've seen it over here in the UK, Game and EMP, they get an exclusive and they whack the price up. I'm not willing to pay for that, because, you know, pop vinyls are cheap, and, you know, if it's more than about £10-12, it's like, no, I'm not paying $19.99 just because it's a store exclusive and you're trying to rip me off. It caught my attention of just being, this just seems to be the pricing, and the fact that they've adjusted the pricing since I put the story up says that they knew there was a problem with it.
Yeah, but they didn't realize how much of a problem, because $20 for that is still absurd. And as near as I can tell, it's not flocked, you know, covered with fur. It doesn't glow in the dark. It doesn't have any special features. It's just a unicorn with a cup of coffee from Inside Out. It's a cool concept. $20 for something that's normally $10 or $12 new, as opposed to, you know, most of these you can also go to a convention or find in used stores for far less than that, only a couple months after they're out. So, yeah, I don't know if this was Disney or Funko or a combination of both, probably the latter, but somebody miscalculated badly.
Yeah, not good at all. But I'm going to shift now over to a different product which got released this week. It's a new collection. It's called called Shufflers. It's the Toy Story Shufflers. So I'm imagining we're going to see a lot more of this. So this is the first series. There's going to be one release of each collection a month leading up to Toy Story 4. So these are priced at $12.95. I think they're about £6-7 in the UK. So you press them down and they walk. You've got Woody, which, you know, they come in these little nice little collectibles. When I do in my next Shop Disney order, I'm gonna pick one or two, probably the Buzz Lightyear one and the Woody one up, just to see what they look like. And then we have this monstrosity that is Rex, that I just think is the worst looking thing I've ever seen for a long time. I don't understand what they were thinking with this thing. I know it's a stylized look, but Buzz Lightyear and Woody at least look kind of like something. Rex, I do not understand what they were thinking with that one. I'm certainly not spending any money on that thing. And then we've got Bo Peep, which could literally just be a Fisher-Price toy. That doesn't really... And then you got the little green alien, which I do think is quite cool. I do quite like that one. So there's a style to them that I like, and there's going to be a lot more of them. And I'm imagining, like, obviously for Toy Story 2, we're going to get like Bullseye and Jesse and, you know, that kind of thing. But they're kind of quite cool. What did you think of them?
Not really my style. Like you said, they're stylized, and when I go for collectibles, I tend to go for more realistic ones. That said, I've seen stuff like this before. I remember growing up with things like this, although instead of a button, there was normally like a windy tab on the side, very small, just, you know, it would twirl some gears or something like that, and then it would shuffle forward a little bit, and it was pretty common. So it's cool that they got rid of the windy part, and you just have to push a button now. So that's, you know, the future. But yeah, I'm not the target audience for this, so this isn't really this really isn't a thing for me, but it's cool to see them trying new things.
This is the thing, especially in the collectibles market at the minute. They've kind of, you know, obviously Funko have, they've still got, they're still very popular, but, you know, the Vinylmations went, the Zum Zums seem to not be hitting it. They've tried with, there was the other plushes as well, which didn't really kind of do much at all. The Yuffie, that kind of seemed to come and go, and that didn't seem to have any longevity. They're trying it with this. So they're trying out a few different bits and pieces. Some of them are fun, some of them aren't, but nice to see kind of Disney trying out a few different items. So shifting gears now again, over to the Lego side. And this one is one that we've been hearing about for a long time, and it's finally got the go ahead, which is the Steamboat Willie Lego set. This was officially announced by Lego this week. It was created by Mike Sumobo or Sumo Mate 90, so I probably butchered that there. This is part of the Lego Ideas program where people get to build it, they put it up online, and as they get votes, they get voted on. Once they hit like 10,000 votes, they get pushed forward to Lego to be looked at. Now, these were all the ones they were coming up with. We had friend sets, there were some cars, there was some space stuff, and some cities. And the Mickey Mouse one, it had lots and lots of votes. I remember voting for it myself. That one got picked up. So did the friend set, the Coffee Park Central. They're going to be making one of them. So we don't know quite, when it's going to be coming out. They have said that there's going to be some adjustments. They're going to have to probably tweak it a little bit to make it things. But I think this is great. I think the idea of them doing kind of these Lego ideas and doing something a little bit unique and different, I'm going to pick it up. I do like these Lego sets. I did pick up the Tron one. I regret not picking up the Wall-E one when I saw it in the Lego store when I was in London. And I know when I was looking the other day, they're still kind of quite pricey. But I like these ideas. I think when they do something a little bit, I'm really surprised they didn't release anything. I mean, they released those brick heads, but they didn't really do a huge amount for Mickey's 90th.
Right, and this will be a chance for them to do something for Mickey's 90th. I think it was a good set idea. It's simple, it's small, which is kind of nice. It will still be overpriced because it is an idea set. Those always cost a little bit more than regular items. But I'm still expecting this maybe in like the $25 range, give or take.
I think Tron was about 30, so I'm guessing it's going to be around there because it's not a massive set, you know, one minifigure.
It looks like it's on it.
So, yeah, that's kind of quite cool. On subject, I don't know if any of you did follow me on, social media, and I'm going to do a video of it. I did pick up the BB-8 Lego set. It was half price. I saw it on Amazon, and it was a massive, great, big BB-8 droid, and he kind of twist it and its head moves. It's been out for a while, but I'm getting to that point now, especially with Lego, where I'm starting to go, you know what, on these big sets, I'm going to hold off because there's quite often some big discounts. It's like 50% off, add 1,200 pieces. I was sat there for 2.5 hours on the day off, nicely just relaxing building Lego. So that's kind of something. There was a lunch block along the lines of going, yeah, you know what, I should do this more often of not buying them at launch and wait, get them a few months afterwards or a year later and get saving some money.
Yeah, and I remember Legos didn't used to have sales. The Lego price was pretty much consistent through its entire life, and if you didn't get it while it was in production, the price was only going to go up because the collector's market or people holding on to them. And that's not the case anymore. Now you can definitely wait out for sales on almost every item. Heck, I would expect even the $800 Millennium Falcon is probably going to go on sale at some point before the end of its life. This is why I have not bought any of the new Star Wars sets yet. We know there will be a sale on May the 5th. We don't know if those sets will be involved, but we do know, you know, if you spend $75 or whatever the minimum will be, you will get an additional, you know, unique bonus for that. So, like, why should I buy them now? I know all of them are going to be available on May the 5th. Some of them might even be cheaper on May the 5th. I can get a bunch of Legos, and that will probably be my Lego purchase of the year, other than maybe the Captain Marvel Quinjet, which has been in stores for a while. I'm expecting a sale on that to pop up.
Well, this is not too soon. Last year, I brought a load of the Black Panther and the Avengers Infinity War ones, and they were all in the stores discounted afterwards, and I've got to that point of going, yeah, I'm going to, the Captain Marvel one, I haven't picked up yet. I haven't seen it in stores just yet, but it's just along the lines of, yep, I'm going to pick it up when I see it on sale. If it's just 15-20% off, I'm going to pick that one up. But yeah, I was looking the other day. I saw the Y-Wing, the collector's edition, down about 10%. I've started seeing the discounts of, and I'm starting to think, actually, rather than buying the smaller sets, I'd rather buy the biggest set and these 12, 15 pound ones. You know, I'm definitely having started getting into some of the big Star Wars sets going, yeah, I actually prefer this. I prefer building something of value, spending that bit more for getting something massive than just lots of these little 12, 13 pound sets that, you know, I build them and yes, this is full of minifigures.
Yeah. And they're both there for different reasons. Like the big sets are models that you can show off, like the Millennium Falcon. I'm not even talking about the big one, like the one from Solo that still has the escape pod attached, the AT-MT Walker, stuff like that. They make great show off pieces that you can have and just put them on display on wherever you want. And then the smaller sets are, you know, you build up your minifigure collection. So you've got like a bajillion stormtroopers and a Han Solo or something, and a little tiny X-Wing to fly around, or, you know, they appeal to both markets. And I kind of go both ways. Like I will spend a good amount of money on a starship or a spaceship that I really, really like. Like I bought the Apollo 11 model when that was released a couple years ago, and I loved putting that together. But at the same time, I also love putting together the little tiny ones. So.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's all expensive.
It's all of it. Yes, Lego is not the cheapest thing, but it's great fun, and it's that kind of thing as well. Having non-screen time, especially, is still very important. Okay, so on to our last sort of story, really, is Epcot. Now, the reason I brought this up is that kind of does affect a lot of stuff and how what's going to be coming up in the future. So Disney announced this. It's almost as if they planned it for the fact that Universal announced a brand new roller coaster for Harry Potter. So Disney shot back with the idea of they've creating a new play pavilion and park entrance coming to Epcot. So first off, the concept art for the play pavilion. We can see here, we've kind of got characters in here. We've got like Mickey Mouse down here. We've got Nick from Zootropa over here. We've got Olaf over here. And we've got little emojis. We've got Marie. We've got Eat the Mode. We've got Joy. So there's a kind of weird thing of them creating this area, this play pavilion. Yeah. And a lot of people go, oh, there's IP. And there's other people go, oh, it's not IP. This looks to me very much along the lines of trying to create a new version of like almost like Wreck-It Ralph, a bit more futuristic. But also, to me, I saw this and go, no, they are feeding Disney into here with the icons. You know, you can imagine them all being neon things flashing, you know, and there's going to be meet and greets in here. So the new pavilion will be developed as the first of its kind experiences devoted to playful fun, inviting guests into initiative interactive city, bursting with games and hands-on experiences. Friends and family will be able to interact with famous Disney characters in an energetic metropolis unlike anything seen before. And an unyet space will come into life under the vast dome of the pavilion known as the Wonders of Life, and will debut in time for Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary. So it's going into the Wonder of Life, so it's nice to see them finally doing something with that building.
Yes. I'm for this. As we've said multiple times in the past, the parks were always supposed to be constantly evolving. And Epcot as the experimental part, I mean, that's what the E in Epcot stands for. It makes sense for them to occasionally refurbish it and update it with something that maybe fits more with a modern aesthetic or a future modern aesthetic. And I'm not sure that I necessarily like this aesthetic yet. I want to see what it actually looks like, you know, in reality when it's put together. But I want them to continue experimenting. I want the parks to continue to evolve over time. And sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. Not everything is for everybody, but I kind of like what they're showing right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that this building sat there empty doing nothing. They just use it at the Food and Wine Festival to chuck a load of. They only use So to use that whole area makes sense. They can also, by it being indoors, they can kind of make it a bit dark, and they can make that thing of when you walk in and the neons and the bright lights, and it feel like, you know, maybe going to like when you go to Tokyo or something like that, where it's all bright lights, making it feel like you've walked into that kind of the internet bit from Wreck-It Ralph. The fact that you got the icons from the Disney side and you got meet and greets and it's a play area, it doesn't exactly sound like it's too expensive for them to build. You know, it's going to be more of it almost feels like they're moving a lot of the, you know, they know they need to add more meet and greets. They want to add the Disney factor to it, but it's not your traditional like area where it's kind of broadening that line between full-on Disney IP, but also something a little bit different. I quite like the idea of what they're doing with it. I'll be honest, I'm finding like this whole thing with Epcot right now is a really weird zone of, they've announced lots of stuff that's going on. They're building the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're building Ratatouille. They're putting apparently other bits going on there. They've also announced they're going to be changing the front end of the building of it as well. They've said that the main entrance, they're going to have the plaza when you walk in. There's going to be new pathways, sweeping green spaces, a newly reimagined fountain, and this design will pay homage, etc. Just generally, Epcot needs an update. And I'm not part of the idea of their thinking, oh, you know, this needs to stay true to the original vision. It's like, that vision was 50 years ago. There's a new vision going on right now. Customers today want different thing. You know, I know I think on our last trip, of having a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old take him into Epcot, I saw Epcot slightly differently from a different angle, seeing it through their eyes. So they were like, what is there to do? Well, they were looking for that content from Disney. That's what we've gone there for. While us adults like the going around in this futuristic zone, the future zone of Epcot hasn't been futuristic for 40 years. It's just, right. You know, it's just not like that anymore. And trying to keep it to that is making it become less and less relevant.
Right. I mean, it's called the Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow. That's what Epcot stands for. It's supposed to be a vision of the future, an idealistic version of the future, but still the version of the future. And what we see as the future is very different from what people in 1982 saw as the future. And it makes sense for it to update and have and integrate, you know, internet culture. Where's the internet going? This kind of more unified global world that we're entering. So it needs to be updated. And I will add on, I've said this in the past, when I was a kid, you know, very young, Epcot was the worst. It was the most boring of the parks as a kid. And that was when, you know, Captain EO was showing and, you know, the original version of Figment and stuff like that. I found Epcot so boring. It's only as an adult when you're like, oh, I can travel the countries and experience different cuisines and, you know, it's more of an entertainment area rather than a park that I've appreciated. But yeah, like you said, 9-10-year-old Epcot is not the place. You can go to the Frozen ride. You can sing along with that. You can take them on Soarin'. You can take them on the test track. But after that, you're done. And it doesn't feel like Disney, like the way Animal Kingdom or Hollywood Studios or, of course, Magic Kingdom.
I think that's the thing, is Epcot didn't have the Disney aspect to it when it launched, and some people are trying to hold on to that. And it's like, the audience going there now, there's so many franchises, you know, and I like the fact of them putting Ratatouille in France, they're putting that new Beauty and the Beast show into France. You know, we got Frozen in Arendelle. I mean, I'd love them to put something new into the UK pavilion. I think each area needs, you know, it should have some attractions in the background. Because it's like, to me, like Frozen and even Ratatouille, you can walk through there. And if you're not actually looking for those rides, that my sister-in-law managed to walk around the whole thing and didn't know there was anything going on there, because they are hidden. They aren't bang, you know, they don't have a big sign going enter here kind of thing. I'm not a problem with this. Just a whole new futuristic area. The thing with that play pavilion of being in the Wonders of Life building, you know, it's sat there. It's kind of quite cool. I'd have preferred them to turn that into another country, done that into a different area, you know, I mean, Wakanda would have been quite nice, but that probably wouldn't have gone down so well. But yeah, I think future. I still think Future World needs a lot of more modernization, and maybe by putting that there, they can move some of those characters from what was the main innovations building. They can move them out of there because that place is packed. I mean, that place is always packed full of kids, and I think they need to get characters in there quicker. You know, they need to be doing that at a much faster rate than they've been doing. But yeah, I think meet and greets for the characters, adding more IPs, adding things. I'm all for it for Epcot. I know it's an unpopular opinion for some, but you know, that's what they go to Disney for, is for Disney. That's kind of what most people go there for. And Disney are bursting at the seams with different IPs to use.
Yeah, even just from the last 10 years, a lot of the very popular IPs that they could be using, and they aren't using at any of the parks in any significant way. And yeah, I love going to the parks, but if they're not changing, I don't see much point in doing that. I love going on the legacy rides. I love, you know, going on the rides that I've enjoyed over and over, but it's the new stuff that gets me coming back. And yeah, I want to see new stuff at Epcot. I want to see, you know, Galaxy's Edge at Hollywood Studios when that opens up. Not when it opens up, that'd be crazy, but you know, at some point. And they do need to constantly be evolving. And even in Florida, there's only so much space, which means repurposing stuff that already exists. That's just the way it is. And yeah, sometimes they'll pick rides where I'm like, no, I really love that ride, but
yeah,
hopefully they replace it with something even better.
So. Yeah, I know when I go into Hong Kong Disneyland later this year, I'm really excited about doing the Ant-Man and the Wasp ride, which they've taken the Buzz Lightyear spin and they've turned it into Ant-Man and the Wasp. I can't wait to try that one out. I know they're doing it in Paris as well. They're taking the Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster, turning it into Iron Man. You know, great. You know, this is cool. And personally for Epcot, I would more than love to have in every single world, in each land, have a proper attraction. You know, put Winnie the Pooh or Mary Poppins or something like that into England, put a Mulan attraction into China, put Big Hero 6 into Japan, you know, this kind of thing, of do something with that American pavilion rather than it just being a place to get chips for kids. Because that essentially, you know, they could do something there, a lot more fun. And yeah, you know, put something in Germany, you know, put a Snow White attraction or something like that into the back area. Don't keep the front end so you can walk around and you can enjoy it, but put something in there. You know, there's such potential to turn that World Showcase into, keep it the World Showcase, but you could put, you know, if you build out with attractions in there, you can suddenly turn that whole area into something that kids love and adults will love as well. And you know, just, yeah, you know, the food and wine thing is great, but, and that's what adults love about it, but yeah, it doesn't work as well for today, even though it's always busy stuff. But I think they need that. I think going forward, either that, you know, they need that fifth park, and they need to turn Epcot into that fifth, into something new.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens, because this might just be the beginning of a lot of changes, and it might not. If it turns out it's unpopular, then they'll go in a different direction.
But the thing is, you know that these are going to be packed, you know, and they're going to be full of people going in, taking their kids in to meet the characters. It's going to be popular. But we'll have to know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Follow us over on Twitter and Facebook to keep up with everything over there. You can subscribe to the channel on different podcast services, and you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. I would really appreciate that if you did. James, where can they find you?
You can find me at heroiclegacy.com.
And on that note, guys, we'll be back next week. We're going to be a day later next week because I'm a little vacation for James, but we'll be back on Tuesday. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.